Our next case this morning is Davis against Novi. Mr. Murray.
May it please the court, Edmund Murray on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Michael Davis. This case is a civil rights case brought in relation to the Fourth Amendment, wherein the plaintiff alleged that he was improperly stopped by the two defendants, Village of Bolingbrook police officers, and that searches that took place thereafter in relation to his person, his vehicle, and later his home were also in violation of the Fourth Amendment. The catalyst for the stop was an anonymous phone call placed to the Village of Bolingbrook's emergency telephone system command center, indicating from an anonymous texter that a man driving a truck that was similar in description to Mr. Davis's truck had been taking pictures of a young girl who was walking along with her father through a particular neighborhood. There was no further corroboration of that. Both of the defendants were dispatched and went to the area that was reported through that anonymous call. One defendant, Officer Novi, saw the plaintiff driving in his truck, recognized the description of the truck was similar to that contained in the call, and started to follow him. The other defendant, Officer Escobar, went into the neighborhood looking for some corroboration to the facts that were set out in the anonymous tip. In fact, Officer Escobar found a man walking along with his daughter in the area that was described in the call, stopped and talked to the man and asked him had he seen anyone stop and take pictures of him or his daughter, and he said no. Officer Escobar asked him whether he had made a call to the 911 center reporting this. He denied that he had made the call. During this time, Officer Novi had been following Mr. Davis, and he called to Officer Escobar and said, "Have you found out anything further?" He was following along behind Mr. Davis's truck. He had not activated his emergency lights, and he had done nothing else at this point to attempt to stop or question Mr. Davis. At this juncture, he called Officer Escobar, "Have you found anything else out?" Officer Escobar said, "No, I have not." Shortly thereafter, Officer Novi activated his emergency lights and stopped Mr. Davis. The question that was posed several times in the district court, both in a summary judgment motion filed by the defendants, which was denied by Judge Conlin, was whether a stop so described would be violative of the Fourth Amendment, and in particular was not consistent with the Supreme Court decision in Florida versus J.L. Florida versus J.L. raised the question of the illegality of a stop based on an anonymous tip unless there had been a determination that the anonymous tipster was reliable or the police had independently corroborated the facts that were set forth in the anonymous tip. Judge Conlin, in denying the motion for summary judgment, recognized the pertinent evidence and said that there had not been corroboration, there had not been the establishment of reliability on the part of the tipster, and therefore that that particular stop could not be justified based on the anonymous tip. In fact, Judge Keyes, who presided over 3 days of trial, in his memorandum opinion, where he set forth his reasons for granting directed verdict during the third day of trial, was that his view of the evidence was such that Florida versus JL would not contemplate that stop as being legal or justifiable based on the anonymous tip. The defendants wrote three traffic tickets to Mr. Davis. One was for not having a valid Illinois driver's license. He had recently moved to Illinois, and he had not procured a license within the statutorily prescribed 90-day grace period. He was somewhat outside that time. For not having proof of insurance. And the third ticket was for having an obscured registration ticker on his license plate, where Officer Novy testified at the trial. He didn't testify that he didn't have the sticker, but he said at trial that he could not see the month on the sticker.
Was this evidence of Officer Novy's before the court at the time of the summary judgment motion, his statement about the obscured registration sticker?
Judge Conlin discussed it in her written opinion on the motion in relation to the summary judgment motion, but not to the breadth or extent that it was discussed at trial.
But it was noted.
It was noted.
That's consistent with my recollection of that it was noted as a fact in dispute, apparently.
Yes. Yes.
Which then the magistrate judge resolved against your client at the time that the motion for a directed verdict was made? Essentially accepted the officer's statement.
Yes, yes, that's correct. The key issue here was Officer Novy said that he had seen the obscured sticker, that he admitted, as he had to, that he refrained from stopping Mr. Davis from the obscured sticker.
Was it agreed, by the way, that the sticker was, in fact, obscured?
Mr. Davis testified at the trial that he did note, after the stop, that part of the frame, okay, license plate frame, had obscured part of the sticker. The question really came down to, did Officer Novy observe...
One, was there, in fact, an obscured sticker? I take it we agree on this record there is.
Right.
The second is whether the officer, in fact, noticed it.
Yes.
And he testified that he did.
Yes.
No contrary evidence, I take it.
The contrary evidence...
And after all, he did write a citation for it. At the
he did. He did. But the evidence is as follows. Mr. Davis testified that immediately after he was stopped and Officer Novy approached his car, he asked Officer Novy, what did I do? Did I commit any traffic violations? And Officer Novy said, no, we received an anonymous tip that someone driving a vehicle like yours was taking pictures of children. That's item of evidence number one, that officer, direct evidence, an admission by the defendant, that Officer Novy did not stop him for,
The problem with that is that just takes us back to Wren, right, where the claim is that the traffic problem is a pretext. The real reason is something else. And, of course, Wren says if you've got probable cause to make a traffic stop, the fact that your real reason is that you want to investigate some other crime doesn't matter.
Understood. But this case, Your Honor, is distinguishable from Wren. In Wren, there was clearly established and no dispute that the defendants there had been guilty of traffic violations, and thus, when the car was stopped as a result of those traffic violations, that the discovery of narcotics in the car was also justifiable in terms of convictions on narcotics offenses. But this is a different case than Wren. In Wren, there was no dispute whatsoever, and there was no contrary evidence to the effect that the defendants there had been guilty. The argument...
We've just established there's no contrary evidence here either. Your client concedes he was guilty of that offense.
Judge, the key evidence here is when the stop is made, what was the evidence that was known to the officer who made the stop? For instance, the defendants clearly had to concede.
It's hard to see a contradiction, since the officer who made the stop testified without contradiction that he observed the blockage. And since it's conceded that there was a blockage, right, you haven't attempted to show that he could not have observed it from the place where he was or something like that.
The question is, did he? And was that the precipitator of his stop?
We move to the consent.
Very well.
Let me ask you what I think is the big question in the case. Did you contest in the district court? Are you contesting here the officer's statement as... Are you contesting the validity of the officer's statement that if you don't consent, I will take you into the station house?
Yes.
You don't think that was a lawful thing for the officer to say?
The question under the cases is whether that statement was made in good faith or whether it was made in such a fashion that it was a subterfuge.
Yeah. I'm not asking about good faith. I'm asking whether that was a lawful thing. That is, was that the real threat position, the real consequence of failing to consent?
There is an Illinois statute that says that if a person does not have liability insurance, that the police officer who stops a person driving a vehicle without liability insurance shall impound the vehicle. The fact is that Officer Novy did not do that. The clear implication of the evidence is that he said that, even though it may have been factually and legally correct, he said it in order to coerce Mr. Davis into consenting to searches. And there's no dispute in the record to the effect that that is not what he would do. And even where the Illinois law says that that is mandated that he do that, he didn't do it. So it was clearly a subterfuge. And
that's just kind of back to Wren. You want to pierce the objective stuff to get at subjective stuff. But I just want to be sure I understand your answer. It is that Illinois law not only allows, but seemingly requires the officer to do what these defendants said they would do.
Yes.
That this is not something trumped up, objectively speaking.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Certainly.
For rebuttal.
Ms. Scarry.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Laura Scarry, and I represent the defendant appellees in this case. First of all, the trial court correctly granted defendant's motion for judgment as a matter of law on the issue of probable cause to stop the plaintiff's vehicle. I think it the one thing that struck me in the plaintiff's brief was the fact that he failed to address the Wren case. He indicated that Florida versus JL is the main case that governs this issue, and I would submit that it does not. The officers admit that they did not have a basis to stop Mr. Davis's vehicle because they didn't have any evidence to corroborate the anonymous 911 call. However, Officer Novy testified that he still had that issue on his mind when he located the vehicle that fit the description. When he was behind the vehicle, he observed the obscure...
Well, he not only had it on his mind, that was the reason he stopped.
That was... Pardon me?
That was the reason.
It was. We don't dispute it. It was a basis for the stop. But we know that the Fourth Amendment allows an officer to make a traffic stop if he has probable cause. And in this case, we definitely had probable cause, and it was not disputed in trial. On cross-examination, Mr. Davis was asked, hey, did you notice that your registration sticker was obscured? And he said yes. And as a matter of fact, within days of the traffic stop, he removed the license plate
bracket. Counsel, the question is not what Mr. Davis noticed about the sticker. It's what the officer noticed about the sticker. And to that extent, his state of mind is an issue, not his subjective state of mind, that is, whether the traffic violation it was a pretext for the stop so that he could get at the real reason why he wanted to stop this vehicle, but whether the fact of his knowledge of the traffic violation is disputed here. As I understand the plaintiff's argument here, there is circumstantial evidence that the officer did not, in fact, notice the sticker violation until later on in the stop. And the circumstantial evidence is that he never mentioned it to the dispatcher. He never mentioned it to his partner until later on in the stop. He never mentioned it to Mr. Davis. And, in fact, by negative inference, denied that there were any traffic violations at the time he made the stop when he spoke to Mr. Davis. And that evidence, it seems to me, puts in issue the facts about his knowledge of the sticker violation at the time the stop was made.
Your Honor, that argument could be made.
Argument is, in fact, being made.
Right, and Mr. Davis' counsel made that argument. But I would submit that the fact that an officer does not call over the radio...
That's an argument to make to the jury, what you're about to say.
Okay.
There are facts in dispute about the officer's knowledge of the sticker violation at the time he made the stop. And under the objective test, his knowledge is relevant, even putting the Wren case aside.
Your Honor, I would submit that there is still no dispute in this case with respect to the officer's knowledge.
That requires us to take the officer's word for it. And that's resolving a credibility issue, which the court may not do.
Your Honor, I would submit that the fact that he did not call out on the radio does not negate his credibility by any means, because there were three reasons for the traffic stop. Or there was one reason for the traffic stop, and then subsequent to the traffic stop, the officer found that the driver did not have a valid Illinois driver's license, and he also did not have proof of insurance. Well, the officer didn't call out on the radio, I've got somebody for no proof of insurance, too. So by negative inference, does that mean he wasn't arrested for
He would have no way of knowing that before making the stop, counsel. That's not a realistic argument. He would have no way of knowing that.
Okay. Well, the thing is, Officer Novy did testify at trial that at the point in time, he had two things on his mind. And the testimony of Mr. Davis could not dispute that. Sure, he didn't call out on the radio. Sure, the report indicated that he was arrested for no valid driver's license, but I believe that there was testimony from the officer indicating that we put the charge that has the highest, that is the most serious charge first on the report. We don't have to put the first basis or the reason for the stop on the report. And so that's what I would say to that, Your Honor.
He was parked behind the truck at one point, wasn't he?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't he stopped behind the truck?
I'm hard of hearing.
I'm sorry. When the officer was following this truck,
yes.
At one time he was parked behind the truck. So he was fairly close to the rear of the truck, wasn't
yes.
he?
Yes.
And if you're the police officer is close to the rear of the truck,
yes.
Obviously, I would think one of the things you'd look at would be the license plates.
Of course.
Wouldn't it? And was there any dispute that he had been following for this period of time and had been behind the truck?
Was there any dispute?
Right.
I missed that last part, Your Honor.
Was there any dispute that he had followed this car for half a mile?
Followed the vehicle for a half a mile, and that's the issue. Mr. Davis cannot dispute that fact that he was being followed for the half a mile, and when the officer initially saw the vehicle, he was directly behind the vehicle, and of course, this is what police officers look at. This is the first thing that they see. And when the officer was following Mr. Davis, he had called out to Officer Escobar and asked him, "What do you got? Did you find out anything?" And once that information was received, then he made the traffic stop. And the fact that he made the traffic stop a half a mile from the original starting point, that is of no consequence either, because the law does not provide police officers to make a traffic stop right away. So with that respect, I would say that the trial court was correct in granting judgment as a matter of law on the issue of probable cause for the traffic stop. Moving on to the issue of the lawfulness of the subsequent searches, there were two bases for the search of the vehicle.
You agree with Mr. Moran that Illinois law requires requires the impounding of the vehicle if there is no insurance?
It allows police officers to do that. Let's not forget that law enforcement...
Counsel?
Yes.
Do you agree with the statement that Illinois law requires the impounding of the vehicle? Allow and require are two different things.
Yes, Your Honor. They are two different things. I don't think that the law requires an officer to impound the vehicle. The law in Illinois allows police officers to make arrests. We can unarrest people. I mean, the fact that we see crime happening in front of us or in front of police officers, sure, do they have the capability to arrest? Yes, they do, but it doesn't require that an individual be arrested. By analogy...
Well, look, there's either a statute that requires this or there isn't. It sounds like you don't know.
Well, Your Honor, I do not...
Mr. Moran hasn't made anything of this, but I could imagine an argument along the lines that it is unduly coercive, improper, to say that if you consent to a search, I will not do my legal duty, right? I have a legal obligation to take this car. You can buy me off by selling out your Fourth Amendment rights. Now, that would be seems an odd thing for an officer to do. Maybe there is no legal obligation to take the car.
Your Honor, the exact opposite happened, though. What happened in this case was Mr. Davis asked Officer Novy, well, what will happen if, you know, I don't agree, or what will happen? And all that happened in this case, and the evidence is undisputed.
I understand that. But if there is a legal obligation to take the car, then the officer is essentially deceiving Davis, right? The officer is saying, if you consent, I'll let you go your way. If you don't, I will carry out this law. And if the officer is giving what amounts to an illegal choice to Davis, because, for example, Illinois law requires the officer to impound the car whether Davis consents or not, then it's not clear what the consent is buying. But, of course, we know in retrospect that the defendants did not impound the car.
If I may respond, Your Honor, there is no evidence indicating that that's what happened. What had happened was the officer merely responded to the driver's question, what will happen? And I'm citing United States versus White, where basically it indicates that an officer's express statement that Mr. Davis's vehicle could be impounded and that he could be taken to jail was genuine and not merely a pretext to induce submission. There's no evidence whatsoever that indicates that these officers were coercive. As a matter of fact, the evidence produced at trial indicated that the officers were polite, courteous.
You're just not following my question.
Maybe I'm not, and I apologize, Your Honor.
With politeness.
Okay.
It has to do with the lawfulness of the choice being put to the defendant. Suppose the officer says completely politely that if you don't consent, I am going to send you to Albania on the next flight.
I would submit that sounds coercive.
Well, the reason the consent would be invalid is because the threat is unlawful. The question I'm now exploring is whether the officer posed a lawful choice to Davis. That is, consent and be sent on your way, or don't consent and I'll impound the car. One reason why it might be unlawful is because Illinois law required him to impound the car whether Davis consented or not, and therefore Davis wasn't getting anything for his consent, whereas the officer led him to believe that he was getting something for his consent.
Your Honor, the evidence produced at trial also indicated that Officer Novy took into consideration that Mr. Davis was wheelchair-bound, and Mr. Davis had indicated that he had some concerns about that. And thankfully, in our society, law enforcement officers are given the discretion.
Well, that's the question I began with. Does Illinois law actually give the officer that discretion, or does it not? And one could answer that, I suppose, by reference to the text of the statute or Illinois judicial opinions. But it seems to me that you aren't talking about the text of the statute. You aren't talking about any opinions. Now, maybe you're just not aware of them, because your brief certainly doesn't mention them. And this question came up, and all your brief said is Atwater against City of Lago Vista allows an arrest if under the Fourth Amendment. But
yes.
Atwater presumes, of course, that state law itself allowed the arrest, and then there's a constitutional question. I've been trying to pursue the state law question about what the officer is supposed to do. Your brief doesn't say boo about that.
My apologies to the court for not addressing that issue, and I would be more than happy to submit a supplemental brief on that. But with respect to that issue, the law in Illinois requires that if a crime is occurring in front of the officer, that they have to arrest somebody. But the officers also have the capability to unarrest individuals. By analogy, it's the same thing in this situation. The law...
As I say, that just begs the question whether this statute gives officers that discretion. I think it would be helpful for both sides to file within 10 days memoranda addressing the question whether Illinois law A permits an arrest and impoundment under these circumstances and B requires an arrest or impoundment under these circumstances. Okay?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Moran?
If I may, Your Honor, the 2 points that the court inquired about, whether I heard the court say the Illinois whether Illinois law requires impoundment, and I didn't hear whether the first one.
The first question, logically antecedent to requirement, is what Illinois law permits. That is, was when the officer said, if you don't consent, I'm taking you into the station house, is that a threat that is consistent with Illinois law? Right, put Atwater against Lago Vista out of your minds. That just is a Fourth Amendment constraint on state law. The first question is this a statement of the lawful consequences? The second, the one I was now exploring more with Ms. Scarry, is whether the state law requires that to happen. And if it does, whether nonetheless, as a matter of common law jurisprudence in Illinois, the officer has discretion to excuse noncompliance and let somebody who doesn't show insurance go on his way. My bet is that it does. Otherwise, there'd be an awful lot more vehicles being towed in the Chicago area than one sees being towed.
Well, if I can go there, the statute, in fact, does say that the vehicle must be impounded, and it also says that the vehicle will not be released until the owner of the vehicle tenders proof that he or she has procured insurance. So that is a definite case. A couple of things that I wanted to comment on.
You know, I just want to make the observation that maybe this doesn't go anywhere. Your client may have been promised an illegal consideration for his consent, but he got the consideration promised for his consent. Right, he's promised that if you consent, I won't take your car in, and indeed, they didn't take his car in.
That's correct, and it's interesting. In the Wren case, is easily distinguishable from this case. I'm concerned that that point not be lost. The fact is, the evidence was that Novi said, "I stopped you because of this tip." Novi said over the radio, I stopped him because he had an invalid driver's license, and the law is clear that the justification for the stop has to be based on what the officer knew immediately prior to the stop. It cannot be what he found out later on. The first point of stop, the officers and Mr. Davis were there for an hour. Officer Novi and Officer Escobar had plenty of time to, and in fact did, circle the car and observe that the registration sticker was partially obscured. In the narrative of the case report that Officer Escobar filed, said he was stopped for no valid driver's license. All the computer records from the Bolingbrook Police Department said he was stopped for a valid driver's license. I see that my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.